Hare Krishna, everyone. So today we are reading from Canto 1, Chapter 15, Verse 24. However, before we get to verse 24, I'll just recite in English the text 22 to 23. There's no purport to it, so I'll recite that and then we'll go on to text 24. So text 22 to 23, translation. O King, since you have asked me about our friends and relatives in the city of Dwarka, I'll inform you that all of them were cursed by the Brahmanas, and as a result they all became intoxicated with wine made of putrefied rice and fought among themselves with sticks, not even recognizing one another. Now all but four or five of them are dead and gone. So now we come to text 24. Translation. Factually, this is all due to the supreme will of the Lord, the personality of Godhead. Sometimes people kill one another, and at other times they protect one another. Purport given by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. According to the anthropologists, there is nature's law of struggle for existence and survival of the fittest. But they do not know that behind the law of nature is the supreme direction of the supreme personality of Godhead. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed that the law of nature is executed under the direction of the Lord. Whenever, therefore, there is peace in the world, it must be known that it is due to the good will of the Lord. And whenever there is upheaval in the world, it is also due to the supreme will of the Lord. Not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord. Whenever, therefore, there is disobedience of the established rules enacted by the Lord, there is war between men and nations. The surest way to the path of peace, therefore, is dovetailing everything to the established rule of the Lord. The established rule is that whatever we do, whatever we eat, whatever we sacrifice, or whatever we give in charity, must be done to the full satisfaction of the Lord. No one should do anything, eat anything, sacrifice anything, or give anything in charity against the will of the Lord. Discretion is the better part of valor. And one must learn how to discriminate between actions which may be pleasing to the Lord and those which may not be pleasing to the Lord. An action is thus judged by the Lord's pleasure or displeasure. There is no room for personal whims. We must always be guided by the pleasure of the Lord. Such action is called Yoga Karmasu Kaushalam, or actions performed which are linked with the Supreme Lord. That is the art of doing a thing perfectly. Prayane tad bhagavata ishvarasya vijeshtitam mitho nignanti bhutani bhavayanti chayan mitha. Factually, this is all due to the supreme will of the Lord, the personality of Godhead. Sometimes people kill one another, and at other times, they protect one another. So, Hare Krishna, everyone. Thank you for having one to try and render this service and try and repeat the teachings of Srila Prabhupada. I'd like to ask for the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas and also for those who are listening online. And please forgive me for any mistakes that I may commit in the process. It's an interesting verse. We are continuing with Arjun, who is now relaying back to Maharaj Yudhishthira. He's continuing with his relay of all the things that he has been seeing and experiencing and discovering, especially in light of the fact that Krishna has now unmanifested his pastimes from our material vision. And obviously one can imagine both of them, Yudhishthira and Arjun, the two brothers, are completely devastated, obviously with Krishna gone. I mean, even though they know that Krishna never leaves, and obviously he simply unmanifested his pastimes, and even though they knew that this was going to happen at some point, and they know, obviously, as the chapter indicates, it's their time now to retire timely, because they only were ruling the kingdom knowing that Krishna's there, but they knew that when Krishna goes, they have to go. In fact, Veda Vyas gave them instruction that when Krishna goes, that's your time to pack things up, pass on the baton, right, of ruling the kingdom, and you guys have to now work towards the perfection of renunciation, which, of course, is the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita. So one of the things that's coming through from this verse, so now you can see Arjuna is having so many realizations, and now he's obviously relaying the destruction of the Yadus, right? So this is actually a big, apocalyptic war. Like, you know, we think of the Kurukshetra war as being this huge war. Actually, the Yadu self-destructive war, whatever you want to call it, was also huge. It said 540 million people perished in that slaughter. Like, just like a complete slaughter of people, you know? It's like just a whole, like, race of community of people just decided to just kill themselves, you know? It's like, you know, orgy of violence, you know? So, you know, you hear in the Bhagavatam about all these descriptions of big, big wars, and they're so massive on such a large scale. There are rivers of blood. And see, now when we use the term rivers of blood, it's almost like hyperbole, you know? I think of Enoch Powell right now. He did the rivers of blood speech, isn't it? It went, you know, in the 70s in Britain, anyway. But in those days, it literally was a rivers of blood, you know? Then, you know, lakes of blood and things like that. So, yeah, it was a huge thing. But Arjun was also, for a Kshatriya, is getting very, very philosophical about the whole thing and realized that, you know what, in this world, one minute we're friends, next minute we're enemies, you know, in the grand scheme of things, what does it all mean, you know? So one of the things that's coming through from this purport is the fact that in this world, there's always going to be suffering, okay? Nature's law of struggle, survival of the fittest, it's actually true. You know, yes, we're not Darwinists, but survival of the fittest is the order of the day in the material world. In the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada mentions the strong exploit the weak. That is the way things are, actually. So, and we can even see that people, they turn, you know, they switch. These things are always going on. And here, Krishna even used his own kinsmen, the Yadus, to demonstrate the futility of worldly investment, okay? Yadus were Krishna's most dearest people. And so, through this, well, let me ask a question, actually. What do we understand about the Yadus destroying each other? What do we understand from it? What realizations can we get from it? There's two that came to my mind, but any thoughts? What can we learn from the fact that the Yadus destroyed each other? Yeah.
Because they actually needed to go back with Krishna. Krishna was gone, and so they were only there because Krishna was there, and so there were demigods taking birth in the family of Krishna, and so they needed to go back to their positions.
Okay. Yes, sir. Rasa Raj Prabhu.
Hi, Krishna. They had to be destroyed from the inside out. No one can destroy them from the outside in. So they had to destroy each other, like, you know, it's not the same with ISKCON. It can't be destroyed from the outside. It has to be, you know, in 10,000 years, destroyed from the inside.
Absolutely. In fact, that was one of the thoughts that came to my mind as well. Of course, Sanktam Prabhu also mentioned that it is also part of Krishna's leela to take them back. So the Yadus were so powerful that the only way which they could be destroyed was from within. They were very, very powerful, actually. Another thing as well that is mentioned is Maya is so strong that even dearmost devotees of Krishna, if they stay here long enough, they can get caught up in Maya's bewilderment, right? Because being in the material world is like being in quicksand. You can't stay in the same position for long. You will start to glide down the modes unless you are actively working to climb up the modes, right? So Krishna knew that if the Yadu stayed here long enough, they'll get intoxicated by their own power and, you know, all that kind of things. And then they will actually end up just becoming completely like, you know, get into the whole cycle of karma, reactions and things like that. So before that could actually happen, he actually saved them by getting them to just destroy each other and come back. Yeah. So we can understand from this Krishna's, you know, how he works. Also, we know from this material world that this Maya, place of Maya, is like a never-ending, it's like a never-ending vortex of suffering. It just non-stop, it just keeps going on and on. And Prabhupada, he actually says in a lecture of this, on this same verse, that in this world, people are, it's just kill, kill, kill. And after people are killing so much, they still carry on killing. And it won't stop. There will just be non-stop killing, always and always and always. And then they'll get reactions for it, where they'll be killed again. You kill for so many years, for so long, then Krishna will be like, okay, no problem. You know, you're killing yourself so much, then you'll also be killed in a factory or something like that. Or here you go, here's an atom bomb. Now all of you get killed together. But even after they're killed, they'll come back again and they'll still carry on killing. Because this world is basically land of killing, right? A land of killing and death, okay? So therefore, one understands that, you know, one really needs to, you know, get out of this place, and Krishna is using his own people to demonstrate that. And we understand that here it's mentioned that people have tried to, you know, create some sort of permanent society, some sort of peace, but they cannot do it unless it's without the will of the Lord. And we have so many demonic personalities that try to establish a permanent situation in this world, but it just, you know what, the demons are very intelligent. The demons are very intelligent when it comes to technicalities, but when it comes to the essence, they seem to miss the point. Like, for example, Ravana was a great scholar of the Vedas, but he didn't quite get the point of the Vedas. Hiranyakashipu, all of these people, they missed the essence. You have example of, like, you know, there's a demon called Prabal. He was otherwise also known as Shastra Kavach, right? And he had an issue with Nara and Narayan. He was rampaging around the world, right? Dominating everything, causing so much havoc. And then he was doing this, and each time he would do it, eventually Nara and Narayan, Narayan and Nara Rishi, would come down and then obviously, you know, destroy him. But then, you know what? He still wouldn't give up. Even after getting killed, he would come back again, and then he would do the same thing again, right? And next life, and the next life, and the next life. And he did this for like 999 lives, right? Like, this is the mentality. When you don't have Krishna consciousness, you just think that you're going to just keep going and going and going, you know? Obviously, there is some level of exhaustion there. It was actually on the 1,000th life that he knew that this is my final life as Shastra Kavach. I need to kind of like, you know, I need to do something to save myself. So just on the 999th life, just before they could kill him, he basically took shelter of Suryadev. And because he was getting a lot of his power from Suryadev. He was a Surya Bhakta, right? Sun God. And then Suryadev said, this will be your last life. But, you know, I'll give you all the protection I can give you. So then he got born with a Kavach and Kundala, right? The earrings and the armor. And so they became Karna. And as Karna, that was his last life before, you know, Krishna kind of delivered him, basically. So unless Krishna intervenes, we're stuck in this vortex all the time, okay? And Prabhupada's example of Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, all of these people trying and trying and trying to try and, like, you know, be here, have this eternal rule on this world, but always failing. And the problem is we do some material piety, we get powerful, and once we get powerful, we think that we can actually supersede God. Therefore, we know the example of Punarmushtika Bhav. Do you know what Punarmushtika Bhav is? There was a mouse, and the mouse was being terrorized by a cat. So the mouse was sincerely came to the shelter of a sage and saying, please, please, sage, save me, save me. You know, with a lot of devotion and bhakti and piety, right? And then the sage was like, no problem. I'm going to give you protection. You'll become a dog. So the mouse became a dog, and the mouse started chasing after the cat, right? And then what happened? The dog started getting chased by a fox, right? So now the dog's like, oh no, now there's someone even more powerful than me here. So he came back to the sage, my dear good sage, I'm your supreme devotee. I'm doing so much sadhana and seva for you. So please, can you help me to, you know, protect me? So the sage says, no problem. Become a wolf or something, right? And so something like a more powerful animal. So then the dog becomes a wolf and chases away the fox. And then after a certain point, the wolf comes running back to the sage. Oh, dear sage, I'm doing so much bhakti for you. I'm doing so much practice, you know, offering things to you, right? I'm doing my morning program in your dedication every day, right? Please, can you save me? And then the sage goes, okay, no problem. You become a tiger, right? And then the tiger, as a tiger, the wolf had no chance, right? And then, this tiger then comes to the sage, but this time not in a mood of, you know, worship. This time the tiger's coming and just looking at the sage. And the sage says, what would you like from me? And then the tiger looks at him and goes, I want you. I want to eat you. And then immediately the sage goes, then immediately become a mouse and becomes a mouse again. So that's our predicament in the material world. If you look at the big, big civilizations in this world, right, they become powerful. Generally, if you look at the history of all the big world civilizations, they were doing a lot of spiritual practices. Then they become powerful. Then once they become powerful, then they become atheistic. And then they start to, you know, just descend into like materialism and things like that. And then what happens? Some sort of calamity, whether they destroy each other or other people destroy them, and they basically just become like vulnerable and weak again, right? So this is our situation in the material world. Prabhupada often say, though, that in Kali Yuga, we don't need to even bother with all this. Because in Kali Yuga, people are so short-lived, empires are dying fast. And if you look at the history of empires in the olden days, the Egyptian Empire, you know, Babylon, Mesopotamia, they were like, you know, thousands of years long. Even Roman Empire was like a couple of thousand years old, right? But as you progress through Kali Yuga, you can see that the empires are getting shorter and shorter and shorter, right? You had the Muslim Empire, right? You know, the Caliphate, the Mughal Empire. Mughal Empire is not even 1,000 years. The Caliphate was overall was about 1,000 years in total. Then, of course, you go down more. The Spanish Empire, a few hundred years. British Empire, 250 years maybe, you know? Not that long, actually, right? So you can see things are just getting shorter and shorter. And Prabhupada said, nowadays, we don't have to worry about the demons so much. Even before the demons can come to the full glory, they're dying anyway. You know, the demons, they do damage, but then before they can do too much damage, they end up dying because, like, you know, they don't live so long, okay? So so this is one of the temporary nature of all these things here. It's just non-stop going on this way or that way, people killing each other, sometimes people protecting each other. And so then we look at the whole notion of friendships here in the material world. You know, we put a lot of emphasis on friendships, and of course, I'm not saying we shouldn't. We should, but we also look at friendships in the right perspective, okay? Often, actually, you know, when devotees come to Krishna consciousness, at least for the first few years, I don't know if something you guys have ever found, but they often say that, you know what, I'm developing friendships within Krishna consciousness, but I feel that my bonds with my, karmi friends, my pre-Krishna conscious friends, I feel that I'm still more tight with them. Like, I still feel like I've got more of a bond with them than I have with devotees. Has anyone ever come across this? Because this is something I've come across many times. Well, let's look at that. Why do you think that is? Why do we think that our materialistic friendships, at least in the initial stage, may seem initially a little stronger than our devotee friendships? Is there any thoughts on that? Yep, Samuel?
Maybe more of a karmically similar situation.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And so what happens is that our materialistic friendships, they're basically based on our material conditionings that are basically fitting with each other, right? And obviously we have similar self-interests and things like that, okay? And I'm not trying to like say it in a completely like jaded point of view. I know that once you develop a material friendship, it can grow, and there are wonderful material friendships out there where they stick with each other lifelong. Often you will stick with each other out of duty as well. But it's still based on conditionings. It's still based on, like, you know, interests coming together. When those interests finish, then those mature friendships also finish as well, right? In the Bhagavatam, it talks about how the bubbles in the ocean, they come together and they merge with each other for a bit, then they split again and they go in different directions. Same with family relationships as well. We are so attached to our family in this life, but you know what? In the next life, the family, who knows who that family member, which family they're going to go into and which family you're going to end up in, you know? So yeah, we have to look at the friendships, family bonds. Sometimes, you know, you are enemies in one life, next life you are friends, or vice versa. Sometimes enemies even take birth in families together, right? Sometimes you have families where there's dysfunctionality. It's because of some karmic reaction. I remember once, actually, Godrima Prabhu is here. He once told me a few years back how sometimes you'll have where, you know, sometimes you see in situations where one family member is dedicating themselves fully, all their energy and effort to take care of another family member. It could be the other family member's got some health issues, invalid, whatever it is, right? And it's almost like all their energy and effort is being sucked into looking after that person. They have no life for themselves. It's all towards that person. So in often cases, what could happen is that there could be like some animosity between those two people from a previous life. Often when Kshatriyas fight, let's say you're fighting against another person and you really, really, really hate them, right? Or really want to get them. And just to get close to them so you can attack them, you actually grab their hand and then bring it towards you, Even if it means that you get stabbed in the process, just so you can get closer to the neck so you can take the head off, right? So in the same way, sometimes enemies will even in the next life, if they've got so much animosity and attachment, they'll actually put themselves in a position of vulnerability close to the other person so that all the energy and stuff is being sucked into that person, right? That's one example why such scenarios happen. Not always, of course, right? There's also the case of, obviously, you know, deep affection where they want to look after each other and things like that. But we can see that friendships in the mature world, ultimately, if they're not situated in Krishna consciousness, it's still very much based on material conditionings. And those can switch. Your modes of nature switches, their switches, the whole friendship can switch. Self-interest coming to clash, it can switch. We can see that. I'm sure we've experienced that in our lives as well. Even in the Shastra, we can see this. In the Mahabharata, we had Drona and Drupad. As children, they were friends, but then ended up becoming biggest enemies. Okay? You had Shalya. Shalya was the king of Madradesh. His sister was Madri, who was the mother of the Pandavas. And yet Shalya himself, due to self-interest, joined the Kauravas in the fight against the Pandavas in the Kurukshetra war. Right? Self-interest came into play. In the Ramayana, can we think of two people that are very close together growing up, but then became real big enemies? That's right, yes, the two monkey brothers, Vanara brothers, Vali and Sugriv. They were brothers, they grew up together. Even in the Bible, they have the case of the two brothers, Cain and Abel, right? They also became enemies as well. So like this, we can see there's so many examples. Sometimes you have in the, even the, you know, the Samudra Manthan Leela, in the churning of the ocean, when the demons were really united, defeating the demigods. But as soon as they were churning the ocean and Mohini Murti came along, the demons started fighting each other so they can get closer to Mohini Murti. Right? So you can see the temporal nature of friendships and attachments, material attachments in this material world. But if you have Krishna in the center, as Prabhupada mentions here, if you have Krishna in the center, yat kuroshi yadasnasi, yat juhosi dadasi yat, yat tapasyasi konteya, tat kurasama darpanam, then your friendships can be dovetailed towards a higher purpose. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ji ki, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki. So yeah, we must try and look at how we can develop like a highest friendship. It might take some time to build friendships when you're dealing with devotees, because you're obviously, in one sense, you've got different conditionings, and sometimes the conditions can grate against each other. But if you are both sincere in focusing on serving Krishna, then those conditions can be overridden. Because trust me, when you come to Krishna consciousness, you will have disagreements with devotees, and devotees will fry you out, and you will fry out devotees. Yeah, that's a guarantee, okay? And even with family members, you know, obviously, you know, people may say, but, you know, I love my family, I'll die for them. Yes, but if you really love your family, and if you really love your friends, then you try and help them in the long term. Just like when you're loving parents, you try and build a savings account for your children, right? You know, put in money so that when the child gets older, or if you're really rich, you build a trust fund for them. But what about the long-term investment? Right? What are you doing for that? Because no matter how much trust fund you save for them, it's only going to last them till this life. Or, you know, you hook them up like a really good place at university or like a nice job. But it's only going to last them for this life. But what about after this life, when your kids die, right, and they go into the next life, then, you know, what can you do for them then? So therefore, for that sake, sometimes even in this life, you know, we sometimes forego short-term gains for a long-term investment. So the same way, if you really love your friends, if you really love your family, right, then you try and keep Krishna in the center for them and yourself. It's not just about material happiness, but something spiritual. Prabhupada said Sweden is one of the richest countries in the world, but at least at that time when he gave the lecture, it had one of the high suicide rates. Probably still does, actually. I think the Scandinavian countries tend to have a high rate of depression, suicide, things like that, right? So therefore, we keep Krishna in the center. And then what happens with Krishna in the center, even if we're practicing a devotional service, even if we get reactions, Krishna will take reactions away. Sometimes people may say, but you know, as devotees, we'll still go through difficulties. Yes, but those difficulties are now in the stage of karmic clearance. They're getting cleared up now. So you're not going to go through those difficulties again. Right? Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 2, surrender to me, I'll take away all your good and bad reactions. So one of the main things that I said here, that nothing is happening without the sanction of the Lord, therefore we surrender unto the Lord. Okay? We surrender unto the Lord, and by doing that, we'll have long-term relationships, long-term culture that will not just fade away over time like these big, big civilizations or these big demons and things like that. One of the ways in which you can obviously follow Krishna back in the day was through the Vedic civilization. But one a senior devotee said that trying to replicate the Vedic civilization right now is not possible. It's trying to unpick the bones of the woolly mammoth. Right? The woolly mammoth is long dead and gone. But, you know, we can at least pick some remnants from the skeleton. And that's what we're dealing with right now with the Vedic system. But now the good thing is we can serve Krishna directly through the Sankirtan movement. Right? So through that, we can actually, serve Krishna and also help serve each other. And actually, that's the reason why, if there is some remnant of Vedic civilization left, particularly, let's say, in India, right? Because you look at all the other contemporary civilizations, they've gone. Like we mentioned, Mesopotamia, Babylon, Egypt, Greece, they've all gone. But some remnant of Vedic civilization has remained is because you had few very high quality acharyas that actually just focused on serving Krishna. That's why the long term culture remained as well. Okay. One thing is though, when we surrender to Krishna, it's not that we surrender once and that's it. Hari Bol. It's almost like it's a constant process. We have to keep surrendering at each stage deeper, because Krishna is gonna want you to surrender more and more and more. And the onus is on us actually, because sometimes we get into the trap of thinking, okay, now I'm in Krishna consciousness. Krishna will do the surrendering for me, right? The devotees around me will, you know, just do everything for me. But we have to also actively make the effort to surrender. Just like, for example, sometimes when people, let's say they leave the ashram or they leave a particular yatra, right? And then later on they'll say that, oh, but no one got in touch with me. No one's keeping in touch with me and things like that. Okay, fair enough. Yeah, there is a response for all of us to keep in touch with each other. But that person who's left, let's say that yatra, who lives far away, right, and can only come to the manor, let's say, once in a month or once in 2 months, they can also take their, you know, they can also out of their own, will actually make a call to find out what's going on, how they can get involved, instead of relying on their leader or their mentor to get in touch with them. Because imagine if you're a mentor or leader, and you're overseeing like, I don't know, 10 people or something, then you know, it's hard to keep track. Whereas that person who's out there, he can just give a call and say, okay, how can I get involved? What can I do to get involved and things like that? As opposed to just being in the wilderness thinking, oh, no one's getting in touch with me. You know, so when it comes to surrendering to Krishna, oh, there's still that there needs to be the action on our part to keep surrendering to Krishna. Another thing that Prabhupada mentions here as well is there's no room for personal whims in trying to make this world a better place. You follow Krishna, you follow the process, you follow the Shastra. Yesterday, Srinivas Prabhu mentions how we're living in a democracy, which means demon crazy, because we're basically being run by people who are basically relying on their mental concoction to try and move things forward. Of course, at the same time, this is the sign of the times. Prabhupada said, even though it's not the ideal system, in this age, it's the best we've got right now. Because the monarchs and monarchies and other systems and dictators are not so good either. So for now, stick with the democracy until things get better, when we do have, like, you know, very high quality leaders and things like that. So even personal whims is not always good. Even when we're trying to do good things, because sometimes even for us, it's hard to decipher what is good or what is bad. In the Bhagavatam, there's a case of a Muni called Sobari Muni. And he was meditating in this lake. And Garuda would come now and again to that lake to take the fishes. Because Garuda's an eagle, so he eats fish. Of course, he's a divine eagle. So when he eats fish, the fish don't actually get harmed long term. They actually get delivered, right? Because it's Garuda. Of course, Sobari Muni may not necessarily knew that. So Sobari Muni is using his personal sentiments to think, this is outrageous. How can this eagle come and eat my mates, my friends? Actually, it's literally saying that he said that they're his friends. So Sobari Muni made friends with the fishes, right? And he's saying, how can they eat this fish? This is so cruel, right? And so he cursed, he gave this curse to Garuda that, if you come here, I'm going to curse you. So Garuda's like, okay, no problem, I'm not going to interfere with you. But then what happened? Garuda would come to the lake, and because of that, the serpents, particularly Kalia, would avoid that lake. So the overall population of the fish and the wildlife in that lake would actually be protected. And in return, Garuda would just need one fish, every now and again for his sustenance. But now that Garuda's gone, Kalia's thinking, now's my chance, I'm going to go in. He came in, all the fish and all the, the wildlife of that lake basically started to die. So therefore, Subramani used his personal whims to think what is good and what is bad, right? But actually, if he consulted Shastra at that point in time, then he wouldn't realize that actually, no, let this happen because there's an overall long-term benefit from Garuda coming there, okay? So that's one. We should always, always follow the Shastra. We should always follow the teachings of Srila Prabhupada in our lives and always keep Krishna in the center. Bhakti Charamaj would often say that never ever leave ISKCON, right? That's one of his main things that you get from a lot of Maharaj's lectures, isn't it? Never leave ISKCON, right? Because if you're in ISKCON, it was created by Prabhupada, so therefore you're in a safe boat. Despite all the problems that will, that may come in ISKCON and, has come and will come, right? And like we mentioned before, even if devotees fry you out, still stick with the process, still stick with Prabhupada and the devotees. It's like a family. You're with a family. Even if your brothers and sisters, they fry you out, it's still family. So still stick with it, okay? And the good thing to understand that this life is pretty short. I can say that now, getting old. So I can see the years are flying by. The aging process is kicking in. Last week, I found my first white hairs. I got white hair and I got white hair. You can't see it, but it's there somewhere. Anyway, so that means I'm thinking it's all happening now. It's happening. Well, soon there'll be more white hairs coming, I'm sure, right? But the years are flying by. So even if devotees do fry you out and things like that, ride it through. Ride it through. Because when you do have issues, as brothers and sisters, what happens after a certain point? Those things they die away. You just carry on with the mission. Same here, okay? We have to just carry on with the mission as well, okay? And sometimes, even when you're practicing Krishna consciousness, let's say you have difference in opinion with other devotees. Yesterday, I was speaking to Purjana Prabhu, and he was mentioning how something that Mother Kalangana mentioned, that sometimes, externally, you might have devotees of a different opinion, and they end up like conducting their seva in a different way from what they originally planned. And there could be some mental tension there, that am I doing the right thing? Is things happening the right way? Sometimes one devotee ends up being situated in a different situation from what they had initially envisaged. And they might think, is something wrong? Is something going wrong? But Madan Kalangana mentions that often sometimes it's for a higher plan. So even if devotees, let's say, do end up like going against each other's plans, but if they're focused on serving Krishna sincerely, then it's all good. It's all good. We have example of this, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, right? Back in the day, he was doing a lot of preaching in America, but he was kind of like, not of his own fault, it's because of his personality, because Tamal Krishna Maharaj was a very assertive personality. He was stepping on the toes of certain, temple presidents or whatever, and the temple presidents were also sincerely serving. So they're both right in their service. They're both trying to do the right thing for Krishna. So no one was wrong. So what did Prabhupada do? He said, no problem, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, you go to China and preach there. And that's why, there's a Chinese yatra being developed there. It's like there's so many examples of this happening, right? Like devotees, they're in a certain yatra, they're working together, but then, something happens. But if they're both sincere, Krishna will arrange for them to then go somewhere. And through that, more, expansion may happen, greater things may happen. So we have to be obviously open to that as well. So I'm going to almost finish now, just a couple more minutes. There's a quote that I read, a friend sent me a couple of days ago, where Prabhupada said that a devotee is not ambitious, he doesn't try to do anything big. Yeah, this is interesting. A devotee is not ambitious, he doesn't try to do anything big, he just humbly serves Krishna without any ambition for himself. Okay? How do we understand this? A devotee should not be ambitious, should not try to do anything big? Because then we have Prabhupada himself saying, I always think big. right? So how does one understand this quote? Gaudrima Prabhu?
Self, one remains humble and simple and just serves. But for Krishna, I can do think big and go beyond, you know, in that sense.
Thank you, Prabhuji. We're not trying to do big things for ourselves, for our own glory. But if our authorities want it, if Krishna wants it, that we engage in something that, you know, could lead to something big, then we give our all to that as well. But the whole point is that 1 minute you might be engaged in a big project, next minute you might be engaged in something like a simple service, whatever it may be. But the thing is, whatever Krishna wants from us, that's the whole point. One example that comes to mind is actually something actually Sutapa mentioned in a seminar before as well, is Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is obviously a devotee, very much anchored in his Krishna consciousness. Of course, he made a slight mistake with the Brahma Vimohan Leela. So then he had to get demoted from being the supreme like architect of the universe to then, in his next life, having nothing. No wealth, no status, nothing. Who am I talking about? Haridas Thakur, right? In a, you know, materially low position. But because he was anchored in his Krishna consciousness, in his attachment to the holy name, for him it was all good. Doesn't matter whether I'm in this position or that position. I got my holy names, I got Krishna. That's all that matters to me. Okay? We have examples of that, you know, like, in fact, a lot of the personalities in Mahabharata who are like massive and, you know, very, very powerful personalities, and they take part in Gaur Leela. And you can hear that Gaur Leela, it's interesting because Gaur Leela setting is much more kind of village. It's much more kind of like, you know, cozy, you know, villages and going folksy. It's almost like a folksy kind of setting, isn't it? Whereas Mahabharata is like epic. Huge palatial buildings and massive walls and big armies and opulence. And Gaur Leela, those same personalities come down in Gaur Leela, and it's like, you have like Arjun, who's like the greatest warrior on the planet, and then he incarnates as Ramananda Rai, who's also like a, you know, a governor, but it's like a provincial governor of like Orissa, which is, okay, it's got some position there materially, but it's not exactly Arjun, right? But for them, it didn't matter, right? The main thing is that, you know, they're situated in Krishna consciousness, whether in a nice, cozy, villagey type leela, or whether they're in like this big, epic leela, it doesn't matter. Of course, that's why Mahaprabhu has given us this most easiest process. Prabhupada actually said that in previous Kali Yugas, by now the demons would have taken over, demonic personality, demonic consciousness would have fully taken over, but because of Mahaprabhu's movement, he's actually stemming that from happening. And through the easiest process, which is the holy names, I say it's easy because also Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, in his prayers, which Srinivas Prabhu also mentioned yesterday, the Sarvabhauma Ashtakam, the 100 prayers compiled by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he says that even if people can't figure out their religion properly in this age, because, you know, there's so many contradictions or so many rules and things that they can't follow properly, just taking shelter of the holy names is going to suffice. Of course, it's said to be the easiest. At the same time, it's not that simple. Because one of our, there's a great devotee in our movement, he's left his body now, called Brahmananda Prabhu, Prabhupada's disciple. He did a lot of like amazing projects, like, you know, in Africa and America and everywhere, right? Involved in a lot of big, big projects, very high-level stuff. And then once a devotee asked him, what is the most toughest task service that you've ever been given? And then he thought for a moment, and he said, chanting 16 rounds every day properly. Because we can chant, but actually to chant rounds properly is the hardest task that we can do. You know, like offenselessly, attentively is the hardest. But nonetheless, it is our anchor, is what is going to actually keep us together in Krishna consciousness. And make sure that we rise above these material friendships, and then we won't get so affected by whether one day people are enemies or the next day people are friends. These things won't bother us now. And this is the kind of stage of consciousness where Arjun is right now. He's seeing everything. He's not getting so bewildered now. He's describing his realization to Yudhishthir and saying that, yeah, I can see it now. The Yadav dynasty destroyed themselves. 1 minute we're friends, the next minute we're enemies. This part of the material world. Now's our time to get out of this place and go back to Godhead. Okay, so time's finishing. So any last questions, comments, queries? Yep.
Just an observation. Is it on? Okay. That in the family I lived in, my mother was looking after 8 children. And when she passed away, her no longer being there was actually the anchor for the family to stay together. Very interesting thing. But directly she left this world, we all went our separate ways, and didn't really see each other again. Very interesting. So likewise, when Dad was away, Krishna, when he left, they became themselves.
Mm.
There wasn't that Dad looking after them at all anymore. Krishna had gone away. So then certain things happened. When Dad goes, they all become individuals, and they realize who they are as different people. Sometimes it's just an observation, really, that actually, when Dad goes away, or whoever, or Mother goes away, then the anchor for the family, then they all go their separate ways. That's it. It's finished, and that's just an observation. Like when Krishna went, that was it. It all happened. The family were disunited, and they'd lost their dad. Controlling influence. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely. Thank you for that point. That happens a lot, actually. That scenario: the dad and the mum goes. What often happens as well, brothers and sisters, they start fighting as well over property, all that kind of stuff. So I think in these cases, we have to also be self-reliant and self-sufficient in our, and taking responsibility for our spiritual life. We're dependent on our Vaishnavas, but at the same time, we have to be self-sufficient in developing that devotee association and being anchored in our Krishna consciousness. Because Prabhupada, when he left, there was a lot of ruptures happening within the movement, right? Even in what to speak of that movement as a whole, even in temples, right? This could happen. Let's say you've got a big leader. Let's read Dharmaprabhu, right? He, left this year, right? Thankfully, the devotees are very much, anchored in their Krishna consciousness that, it's been, it's relatively smooth transition. In the future, Sutapa will take sannyas. Right? So when he takes sannyas, he'll be traveling. So then the yatra will have to be reliant on their Krishna consciousness. They won't get his association so much. All yatras in Chaupati, right? It's Radhanath Maharaj is one of the key figures there. Now, of course, Ujjain will be experiencing it. Bhakti Chara Maharaj has left. So you have the dads, the key figures in different situations. But whilst you're relying on them and getting the nourishment for them, at the same time, you have to start developing your own foundation, because Dad won't be there always, at least physically speaking. But of course, thankfully, Krishna has given us his teachings, his shastra, right, through which we can develop that relationship with him, so that, even if Krishna's not directly with us, or Mahaprabhu's not directly with us, through the shastra, we can still make sure that we're properly anchored in our Krishna consciousness. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, yes, Ben Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the wonderful class. I'd just like to comment on friendships and relationships. From my kind of observation, friendships need some sort of central focus point, like you said, key interests of how we relate to each other. And so that can be partying, sports, gaming, whatever it is. And I feel like the solidity of that friendship is based upon what kind of mode that activity is in. So if it's in the lower modes of partying, intoxication, things like that, those kind of friendships aren't that solid, because it's based off a kind of a low mode of happiness. And so, when it's exploring or something more mode of goodness, it's more solid because it's a more mode of goodness. So I just thought it might be something and correlation.
Absolutely. If there's a focus, the bat has to be questioned, what is that focus? Is it like a high-level permanent focus like Krishna? Or is it something lower? I can share, when I was at university, same thing. I had a group of friends. It was centered around partying, having a good time, and, all that kind of stuff, right? But then what happens is that kind of pleasure, it starts off pleasurable, but then ends up, just rubbish. And then what happens is the cracks started appearing in the circle of friends. It went from being very tight to then ruptures happening, bullying happening within the friendship circle. Some friends going, against others, or one-upmanship, and all that kind of messy stuff. After a certain point, for me personally, I was like, I just came out of it. Thankfully, I came to Krishna consciousness, and it was like a clean slate for me. So it was like a fresh new people that I can hang around with. But absolutely. So the friendships have to build around a focus, but then you have to look at what is that focus.
When you take that central point out of it, that's what's remaining. So we need to think on that kind of basis, because that's how you really get towards the true person. And so when that central focus is taken out, then it's just like, well, what have we got? Whereas Krishna consciousness, it develops those good qualities, so you've got more to resonate with people and serve people, and that's obviously the essence of life. Whereas with these lower modes that we engage in, these sort of activities, it's more about selfish activities, greediness and these anartas. So
yeah. Krishna consciousness is the best focus, because it gives you the highest goal, and it also gives you all these qualities and habits that you develop to make sure that, you're being perfect in every way. Because sometimes you even have people that get together for a focus, and when that focus goes, this is the amazing thing about Krishna consciousness. Even if they get people that, let's say their focus goes away from Krishna consciousness, if they practice for a long time, they'll still end up leading a good mode of goodness lifestyle. And the great thing about it is that after a certain point, Krishna will even bring you back in, you always resume from where you left off. Whereas sometimes, I was reading about the history, right? In South America, they've got this big problem with drug cartels. Did you know that a lot of these drug cartels were actually initially freedom armies, revolutionary armies, guerrilla warfare fighting against oppression? What happened that they developed arms and stuff like that, but they didn't have any kind of scripture to help them develop good habits, so they used drugs to fund their revolutionary movements. What happened? That focus of the revolutionary goal went out the window after a certain point. All they got left is the drug trading and the arms. So they basically, their habits have become bad, has become worse in the process. Whereas with us, you develop good habits, good focus. Even if you do fall away from the focus, Krishna will bring you back. And even whilst he's bringing you back, you still got good habits to lean back on. So it's actually amazing. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.